dear True fans, thank you for your support, first of all. And we're starting 2015 off on a good footing. Who joined us?
Hey, Martin, it's Cody Harrison. How you doing?
Cody, nice. Okay, so we're just starting here. I mentioned we're just recording this. Actually, there's going to be a link for anyone who misses it, which is the first time using a free conference call. So anyway, starting 2015, lots of exciting things. Actually, I'm now, just to report where I am, I'm in sweet area of Lisbon, Portugal. I'm here with Katarina, who is a longtime OSC participant and my wife, and she just defended her thesis on open source hardware. And I think it's some seminal work. It's great. It went great. So I came here for that. Otherwise, I live in the Kansas City area of Missouri. But that's where we are right here for the next week, getting a little break here as well. As far as the update on the project and just kind of wrapping our head around the whole package, I think this is definitely an interesting turn of the organization in terms of where we are, because in the grand scheme of things, we've hit it to the world stage with a TED Talk, and now I would say the dust has more or less settled, and it's time to really regroup, reorganize, and see where we go. We've had a lot of proof of concepts and a lot of things that we've been doing over the last 4 years, and we're trying to put it together to a package that works and finally achieves the promise of open source hardware, which is really viral. To me, that's viral replication, creating an open source economy. But we haven't achieved that yet. We've been at it for a bit of time. So I'd like to today discuss where we are and how we can go forward with all the things that are going on. So for a big overview, I mean, first of all, I'd start with a mission, and that is to create the open source economy. I mean, I've been thinking about what that means. I mean, that is the deepest sense where we want to go with this work. And what does that mean? What's an open source economy? It's an economy where people collaborate instead of companies as typical, getting patents and protecting themselves. How about opening up to true collaboration, to increase innovation faster, to a level faster than ever has been seen on this planet, right? So we've seen the examples of Wikipedia doing that for articles, encyclopedia articles. For us, it's really about creating a platform that's the equivalent for Wikipedia, but for the explicit development of open source hardware. And open source hardware is products that can begin to enter the marketplace and become dominant. The promise of open source is that once enough eyes, enough people become developers, once enough energy goes into a project, then the hardware, the open source hardware, can become better than anything else. And that's actually an implicit assumption of the open source paradigm. It's not really spoken a lot about, but I mean, I think about this a lot, and to me, the success of the open source hardware method is that the open goods simply become better when enough developers start working on them. So there's an implicit assumption that the economy, the open source economy, is going to happen sometime in the future. We've had the internet come in a decade or two decades ago, which allowed collaboration to take place and the continuity of development. So, and by the way, for whoever joined us, this is being recorded, so you can listen to the whole thing if you missed any of it. But anyway, about open source development, the promise that open source ecology wants to deliver is that rate of development being fast, the rate of development of products and services and anything within the economy simply being more effective than what we have today, because we have pressing world issues that need to be solved, and we have the potential as humanity to solve them, but it's the way I look at it, it's not really happening in our world today. It seems like we're creating a lot of new problems, and not the level of innovation today is not able to keep up with the issues. I mean, things like the poverty, wars, deprivation of all sorts, are the norm, and we don't see a clear light on it, I don't think. I mean, there's a voice that humanity has. So if you look at the, I'm going to put a link to the replication of our work, because I want to talk about where we are right now and where we can go as the project, because as we're regrouping, reorganizing. So I'm going to put the link, the pirate pad there. Here it is. I just typed in the replication page on Wiki. You can take a look at that. But basically, to date, what's been our record? Since 2011, the TED Talk, the last graph of our track record, like what was documented pretty well, was about 67 different prototypes have been built as of the end of 2012. Okay, so then there was two more years, 2013, 2014. If you look at the replication page, I list a lot of the things that have happened. But all in all, over the last 2 years, if you count the number of replications worldwide and what we have built, I mean, we've built most of the machines, but there's been about two dozen or so replications, primarily the brick press, and a few attempts of the tractor, power cubes that have been built absolutely independently of others. So the landmark was in 2011 when James Slade from Texas, he built our brick press entirely, even without contacting me. I mean, I basically saw that on the internet when he published that, and he showed the machine, the build, and the picture of himself, which I thought was a Photoshop mock-up of our machine, because it was exactly the same. So we know that this works. The plans today are good enough for people to replicate. However, the main learning is that they're not good enough to go viral. And that's, you know, maybe a couple of years ago when the machine was getting quite good, I thought, oh, okay, well, we got to do, or even longer ago, like 3-4 years ago, I thought, oh, okay, we're publishing the plans, it's great, this is going to take off all over the place. Well, it hasn't, because we haven't reached that point. And it's a combination of a number of different things, like the quality of the product, the track record, how many people are using it, building with it. So we're taking that further and trying to achieve what we know as viral replicability criteria. What is that? What is it going to take? So to date, in summary, as of the end of 2014, the number of prototypes or machines built altogether is about 100. That includes, I'm including in there a few builds of the micro house that we did on site. So perhaps the main crown achievement of this is showing that the brick press can produce a very nice micro house. Like if you follow our Facebook, you can see the very nice interior of the micro house and also the speed with which we can build these houses. So in 5 days we built most of the structure outside of interior finishing, pretty much. Walls and roof came up in a 5-day period. So we're developing what's known as our extreme fabrication techniques, extreme manufacturing, where we've achieved a single day build of the brick press that we've achieved in 2012. We've also achieved day scale prototyping. Instead of spending about a month to prototype a machine, we know how to do that in a build from a design. We can do that in a single day. So we've seen a drastic reduction of prototyping times from the scale of months to days. And we do that by, on one side, making our machines very highly modular so that things can be reused, repurposed. There's a much smaller number of modules that can produce a much larger number of machines. So, for example, when we talk about the tractor, we don't talk about the tractor. We talk about a tractor construction set where a lot of the different parts can be reused, and it's like literally like a life set. So those are some pretty good achievements. The most relevant achievement of last year is showing that the economics can be there. So until last year, we were pretty much getting fueled by foundations, a lot of funding, and altogether, actually, the budget of the entire project has been about $1.4 million over the last, I mean, this is from the history from 2004. Most of that money came after 2011. In fact, after 2011, it was about $1 million that came after the TED Talk, foundations, just a lot of interest. Main one being Shuttleworth Foundation, where they were giving us $360,000 per year. That has ended. But until 2013, riding comfortably, trying to develop as many machines as we can, not really finishing anything to the final state that needs to be. It's kind of the what happens when you have money. You're not really responsible for getting the economic self-sufficiency in place. But since the funding has pretty much run out last year, and we know that that's not how we can scale the project. If you want to get replication of the different machines and facilities, including whole campuses that operate like OSC, like the core OSC International Facility, the headquarters in Maysville, Missouri, we want to create a lot of different facilities like that. And we know that the foundation funding is not going to do enough for that, so we want a self-funding model. So last year, we've been exploring the workshop model, and that is a concept of a weekend workshop where we both build the machine and produce an immersion experience. So people pay admission for the experience, like immersion experience in fabrication, welding, like with a brick press. And then at the same time, what we find out is that with minimal training, people can pick up a lot of the skills. It's really diving into the deep end, really showing people their true power, and showing that we can bring the barriers to entry on production, which is our central theme, production, design, everything, taking the barriers down so that common people can really become the masters of technology and therefore masters of their lives, masters of how they live. And that's the core goal of OSC. So with that said, okay, so the workshop model. We had a workshop on the brick press where we built the machine, and it was over a weekend. And then we sold the machine to one of the people that came to the workshop, and we actually cleared $10,000. About $5,000 came from admissions to the workshop, and another $5,000 came from the sale where we sold the machine for about $10,000, and the parts costs were about $5,000. That's excellent. So we're seeing that we can pull in about $10,000 in a weekend workshop. Amazing. I mean, that's great. We've pulled off several workshops where we did the micro house, and we're trying to use this workshop model, which is both education, production, social manufacturing experience, as a model that we're trying to see how far can it go. Can we make many different things in our life using this model? The evidence so far shows that a positive outcome could come even on building things like a house, a swarm-based build process, where in a micro house 4 build, we had about 40 people in the workshop. We finished most of the house. So we're seeing that extremely rapid parallel design builds can happen, actually incorporating a social production model as a new way to do things. So our concept is, can we get to those types of volumes of production that mass manufacturing does today in its typically unethical way? I mean, there's a lot of issues with that, including slave labor, just poor working conditions, or just the meaninglessness of mass production and forcing that markets exist or forcing through a lot of marketing while providing kind of like cookie-cutter products that are not flexible and not really adapted to the humans. We're trying to show that we can do a different model that many, many different producers can get involved in production activity and produce the same kinds of volumes as mass production. So imagine instead of one centralized facility, you have hundreds or thousands of producers, and altogether they add up to huge production. So let's get practical on that. So, for example, for the brick press, which is our farthest evolved product, we're trying to do exactly that. So this year, if I think about the overall goals, the main goal would be to, one, demonstrate that the development build techniques are really effective and that people other than ourselves can replicate them. Because right now, it's like that's not really happening. I mean, not a lot of people are adapting our techniques. That's because we haven't evolved them to that point. But the main goals, if I can point to two, would be to show that the techniques can be replicable such that we can design and build. Well, actually, let's not talk about build, because we've seen single-day builds, and that's how we design things for single-day builds. But entire design cycle, imagine getting them down to a period of 2 weeks for any complex machine. That's a far cry, but I think that's feasible. That means that you break down the process into many, many micro chunks. First of all, you break the machine down into modules, and each module goes through a level development. That's exactly what we're working on. And I really would like to nail that as the organization, how these processes can be defined well enough using all the tools that are out there to make that happen, and provide a model that not only we, not only the decentralists or the hackers can do, but also a regular company can adopt this radically efficient development process for its own ends. I think this model can be replicable to any kind of enterprise, from open source to proprietary people who otherwise would get knocked out by the open source model. I mean, that's what I believe in. So there's the model on one hand, and then application to our products. I mean, if we want to have credibility, we have to show that we can do that with our machines, so like the Brick Press. So the goal would be to get the Brick Press to that point of viral replicability and really exploring what does it mean to get it there. And certainly that is about perfecting your blueprints, perfecting the documentation, including language agnostic instructionals, including awesome explainer animation videos that can walk you through the entire build, and many other assets related to the machine, to how you produce it, to how you can distribute that to others. So the goal for us is to develop the world's first distributive enterprise in practice. So for the Brick Press, we're not going to take over the world with it, but what we want to do is have many, many producers around the world take over the world with it. So that means dominate the, I mean, simply, if the open source technique works, then the machine itself should dominate the market, except the market is irrational. How do you address that? Well, that's the harder part, but on the front of developing a good machine, we can do it technically, then you have to work. The question remains, is viral replicability possible given an irrational market? A market which is, you know, enforced by special interest or advertising or whatever, can our methods thrive even in that? So let's talk about what it would look like. So for the Brick Press itself, we're looking at releasing the full 100% version, really the version 1.0, this April. So right now, the status of that is we're about 95%, what I would say like 90-95%. Last year, we spent about 2 months full-time with about 12, like 18 people or so, students, interns at Factory Farm, doing the documentation. We did a build with our interns. But the Brick Press, and I'll publish this on Facebook, and I actually want to start getting back into writing blog posts, which I haven't done in a long time. But anyway, on the Brick Press, we're, say, 95%. We want to take it to 100. That means absolute perfect instructionals. But beyond that, the distributive enterprise model in practice. What does that mean? So first of all, there's two ways that we see the Brick Press being produced. One is simply where a simple production model where you can go to your fabricator in your local area, give them the blueprints and assets, and in fact, like a whole manual. So that's part of the assets we're trying to generate. A complete manual which shows you how you as a person can outsource this to your fabricator. So that means providing the blueprints, providing how do you approach it, how do you write the contract, how do you, if you don't know how to build it yourself, how do you get somebody who does to build it and for sale if you want to. So we have built a few of the machines, and I think we can have many more people build and make money from it. So we're not afraid to do that. We want to distribute a plan of how one person would go to, for example, to their fabricator to build the machine. The way we've been building the machine a lot is in the swarming builds at Factory Farm, the collaborative production model, where a lot of us get together and we swarm build the thing. Now that's a more complicated process, but before that, before we go into the whole organization of a build event, which is a highly orchestrated parallel build, lots of people, lots of equipment to make it happen, we don't have to make it that complicated. The simplest model for viral replicability could be that we publish the blueprints, the know-how of how to approach a local fabricator to get the machine built. Now, there's many tricks to that. I mean, how do you assure the quality control? You know, so we have to define very specific procedures for that and ways to address quality control issues, which, you know, testing, data collection, how do you, how do you make sure that when your fabricator produces it, this thing is going to work? And the complication is there's hydraulics and electronics in there. So how do we do that? Right now, we have the full open source blueprints for the electronics. We have ways that we actually have this documented where you can get the circuit fabricated by someone else. Basically, you send it out to a fab shop, basically circuit fabricator. And the case for the controller is actually a CNC laser cut thing that you can outsource from Panoco, which is a mail order CNC cutting. So a transparent case for transparency. But basically, we've got all the blueprints of how to do everything. If we send this off to a fabricator, the fabricator perhaps will not know how to do the electronics, but they will be able to do the mechanical parts. So that's why we have to acknowledge, because of the complexity of the machine, we have to acknowledge how all the different pieces fit together so that someone can produce this effectively. So by April, get back to the full development method, some design sprints, and in the process developing more the development template itself so that massive parallel swarming can happen. There's a lot of missing pieces, the main one of which is the open source CAD solution. Right now that doesn't really exist. We've been using SketchUp for a lot of stuff. It works reasonably well. The open source solution known as FreeCAD that's in development. Actually, I followed up with that team, and the news from today, I just posted this on Facebook, they're actively developing their toolpath generation module, which means that once you do 3D CAD, you can actually generate cutting files for, like, say milling or CNC torching or whatever. And that's happening in FreeCAD, the open source package. Now, thinking about the CAD solution, that is one of the central blocks to the massive parallel participation. So I've been considering this, and I think maybe OSC can stand behind the development of a cloud CAD solution. So that means something where you take a package like FreeCAD, which is open source, and then have people work on it in parallel in a browser. I think that's technically doable. I've been studying this in terms of how complex that process would be. It's quite encouraging what I found out so far. So perhaps a few months, I think, given where FreeCAD is right now and a few months of development time on software, I think we can have a cloud CAD solution. I mean, that would be an epic effort, and I will think about how to make that real this year as we develop the techniques and apply them to the brick press of the first product. So the Inventor product, the concept that we publish, not only the blueprints for the machine, but the blueprints of how you would end up producing the machine yourself, first by starting with working with your local fabricator. And then we will publish the model of how you organize a build event, a mass parallel build event, like the swarming build workshops that we hold at Factory Farm. That is a much more complicated thing, but that will be the second thing we will publish. So if we were to see, I think if we publish the brick press end of April, my personal goal is to stand behind, whether we can get about 100 replications within about 6 to 12 months. We know that many people have looked at the plans. Some people found them a little confusing. Some people attempted them and aborted them. So I've been looking at what all the replication has happened. And I think we can make it much easier for people by just simply higher quality blueprints and the option that you can simply instruct your local fabricator how to do it. And there's one trick to that, too. In the latest version of the brick press, we went totally to CNC cut metal for the brick press. The initial version of the brick press involved that you're using normal steel sections that you get at the local fab shop, which are like channels, tubes, and other things. Well, the latest version, which allows the machine to be built in a single day, calls for CNC cutting pretty much all the pieces from flat metal and then welding. Well, We're going to go back and revive the version 4. So that's version 6 is the CNC cut. Version 4 is the stock steel sections. So we're going to publish, go back to the blueprints and republish the older version, which doesn't require CNC cutting. And we're going to then it's to that to make it easier for those people who don't have CNC fabrication capacity. And why do we want to do that? Well, the CNC allows you to build the machine way faster. Perhaps, the overall build time is about 50 hours, 40, 50 hours. The CNC cuts down 20 hours from the build time. Now, why do we want to go back to the non-CNC cut machine? Well, the practice is that in 2014, there's a few replications of the brick press, three of them, so there were four total, three or four total, but out of the four, three of them used the older plans, not the CNC cut. There's one guy who actually ended up CNC cutting the metal, but everyone else went for the simpler techniques because it actually, if you don't have access to a torch table, the CNC cutting does add $1,000 to the build price. So that build price is about $5,000 instead of like $4,000 for the materials. So we're going to revive the older blueprints in version 4 as a way to increase the number of people that can build it. Because, I mean, maybe people are not building it because just nobody has access to CNC. Well, we'll see. We'd like to increase that. So I'm going to kind of wrap up here, maybe open up to questions in a little bit, but just to wrap up for the plans for this year, the big overview, now we have a full board of directors. If you look at the Facebook, there's a good update on, we've got good guidance for the project. We've gotten Joshua Pierce, who is behind the Open Source Sustainable Tech Lab Attack. Another excellent person is Sunny Bates, who's a big-time networker through the TED community. We got Alicia Gibb, who is the president of the Open Source Hardware Association, and myself, and Colby Thompson, who's a serial entrepreneur who's been on our board for a long time. So that is good. We're working on publishing an official, solid, strategic plan for the organization. You know, to date, we've pretty much winged it in many, many things, and because the project was highly dynamic, we went with the resources that came to the project. Right now, we want to get much more serious about a concrete plan, rollout, and sequencing. We are pretty much trying to get, if we develop the build techniques, I mean, I'm really thinking about it as, let's get to the point where any new machine can be developed completely from scratch. And that's not based on nothing, but based on all the prior work that's been done. We have to collect and sift, but on a two-week time scale, so that any of the new machines can be designed completely on something like 2 weeks. Now, that's a very hairy goal, and I've been talking about that for a long time. And in fact, I mean, I talked like in 2012, when I was a little more naive about how enterprise works, I said, oh, yeah, well, the way that things are going, we're going to be done in like 2 years from the TED Talk. Well, that hasn't happened because we're finding out that to manage people to transfer from vision to execution is a whole question of enterprise management, and that's what I'm learning a lot about. But I think we can still get to the radical collaboration methods that end up with a two-week development cycle for any complex machine. By breaking down the things into modules and then into many development steps. And a huge community. There's a lot of processes that are internet-based, crowdsource-based, that we can leverage. I think we've been having a lot of learnings on that, how to put it all together. And it's really about devising a very sophisticated collaboration ecology for that whole process to happen. That's what we're working on. So with the development technique, I would like to claim that as soon as that's in place, and I'm going to put a timeline to that. I'm hoping that by the end of this year, we will have a real serious revision of our techniques, and then we can talk about where we go from there. But I would like to see it that in 2 years, in a Well, if you take 2 weeks per machine and there's 50 machines, you're talking about 100 weeks for a design build of all the different machines. Now that's getting back to some pretty hairy, audacious goals. I think they're doable altogether. But if we talk about the long scheme, I'm kind of looking at more as a 20-year plan, where within 10 years, I would like to see the first full replication of an entire working facility. That means I mentioned before about the kind of a lifestyle where the available technology allows you to survive and thrive with minimum labor. Now, I talked before about a work day of about 2 hours per week in a fully developed facility. So to provide food, energy, housing, the essentials, because we're actually using appropriate high-power technology, we can get away with spending minimum time on surviving, and then we can contribute most of our time to thriving. So I did talk about imagining what life would be if you can survive and thrive on 2 hours of work per day. Yeah, well, within 10 years, I'd like to see that happen. So that means a fully developed facility, agriculture setup, fabrication facilities, agriculture facilities, learning, teaching facilities that make the whole ecology of sustainable regenerative technology a reality. That's what a lot of people talk about, but you want to create that in an open source so that the barriers to building that are low and it's actually a feasible, economically feasible proposition. So that's the 10-year plan. The 20-year plan is to go viral with these facilities worldwide. Also, we can talk about that later, but the first step is to develop our development techniques to the point that they're extremely robust and the rapid innovation is a reality that we can use in-house with an open-source ecology and see how people pick that up. Do other open-source projects pick that up? Do regular enterprises pick that up? So the crown jewel for now is the accelerated development methods. And the first application on the brick press, seeing if that can go viral by this year when we take that to 100%. And maybe just one more note to wrap up. The tractor, but looking at that as the tractor construction set, so that means really if we develop the construction set, the basic modules and techniques, we're really building 20 different machines instead of one. So micro tractor, bulldozer, backhoe, trencher, many other things. About 20 machines altogether that are in the set come out of the tractor construction set. So we like to think about it in construction sets and modules in order to get this rapid development, also mass buy-in because someone is invited to this because they're not going to just build one thing, but a construction set that can be very flexible and build many, many things. So that's one way to get more of the community involved. So there's the tractor infrastructure. The micro house is something we've gotten quite far on and would be a killer app eventually. The modular design build, we'd like to get that to basically that you can do a radical build in a weekend workshop. In fact, I mean, the next major step on that would be building a 3,000-square-foot workshop in a weekend with about 100 people. So we're not going to take that on until we have the techniques and protocols in place, but that we're looking at holding off until we can do that and get all the processes and techniques worked out to be able to do that. But we've seen amazing results with the modular design on the house itself. So we're seeing that the modularity can apply from to serious heavy equipment up to houses and stuff is working. I mean, I think in general, I'm quite pleased about how everything is coming together, including the financial models. I mean, the extreme builds are really, really promising. So we're just trying to push the limits on all these things and make it happen. So in 2015, early 2015, this is where we are. We'll publish the integrated strategic plan. I'm going to get that approved by the board in the next meeting. We're also working on communication strategy and the model, the business model for how the brick press could go viral. So that means we're actually talking about an accelerator program for entrepreneurs who can produce the brick press. And we will train them to do that as part of the distributive enterprise model where we're trying to get people to build these things instead of us just producing it. But what's the OSC role? Well, OSC will test these business models. I mean, we will, if we develop the way to build and sell the machine using local fabricators, we'll test that out so we can generate some revenue from that. We can generate revenue from workshops where we teach people, but altogether we publish all of this for free. I mean, you can buy everything. All of our assets, like materials, will be free online, but if you want to buy physical things or our time, that will cost you. Like, for example, if you want to buy the coffee table book on tractors or microhouses, you will pay for that, but of course you can download it for free as a PDF or whatever on the internet. So really try to be true to lowering the barriers for anyone accessing this knowledge. And then the more in-depth stuff where, you know, we're spending time teaching you, we'll charge for that in workshop settings and things like that. So that's kind of an overview of where we are right now. Viral replicability criteria are big on this year's agenda, as well as getting the whole development protocols up and running so they're really efficient and replicable so that when we can use them, we can really execute on all those hairy things that I've been talking about for a long time. And learning a lot about how to really take those visions into reality. Okay, so I'll quit there. That's quite a bit of talking on my part. I'd like to open it up to some questions, and who else wants to chime in on this conversation? And this is being recorded, actually, so don't say anything you wouldn't like the world to hear. We get the initial first. This is kind of like the premiere view of the latest on OSC, where we are, and then we'll publish this subsequently on our media, including writing a blog post about it. So I really want to try to, I'm going to commit to writing decent updates on this work because I haven't been doing that since a long time. Okay, so people, go ahead. Who's got any questions? And also thank you all for your support on making this work happen as true fans. Okay, questions?
Martine, this is Bernie.
Bernie.
I have a couple of questions, mainly for things like when you're talking about the CEB replication and just the overall adoption.
Yeah.
It sounds like you've got some steps and you're addressing like design-related issues, but have you done any research or is there a press, an initiative, I guess I should say, to figure out what those challenges people see out there, why they're not actually doing the, you know, more of this, more of making their own machinery? So we can maybe address those as part of the designs in the project.
So you're saying that we need some feedback from the community on what are the blocks?
That would seem to be that was my takeaway, certainly, you know, was that,
I mean, I think that's readily doable. I do want to, the particular mechanism I want to do for that is set up a Stack Overflow-like instance where we are pretty much saying to the community, just publish it on Facebook, publish it on our media, say, okay, this is an official feedback request on the Brick Press on what you all think needs to happen, and especially talking to the people that have built it, maybe revisiting the replicators, contacting them. But throw up a do you guys know Stack Overflow? It's basically the upvoting, basically some medium where we can upvote. So people will just write down their feedback, and then we can upvote and kind of like manage that, kind of add value to that by feedback. The first step to that could be as simple as a form, like a Google form that we can simply blast through the internet to simply say, hey, feedback, let's get some feedback on all this. So right now I would propose that we would implement, I mean, the thing I know how to do right now is a form, set up any instances of upvoting. And I'd like to see if that there's any plugin for the wiki or somehow maybe on our website, somehow we can put in or set up a Stack Overflow instance. And I know Fred Isley, I think he set something up similar to that. But I'd like maybe your feedback on the people that are on, how can we get this feedback happening? We can definitely, like as we go along, one of the steps in the overall development process is to have review and feedback. And a firm protocol to do that is one of the things we have to develop. Right now, I must say, we don't really have a great means to do review. What I do is pretty much, you know, send emails to people who have worked on it, kind of like informally here and there, but we're not really learning as much as we can. So we really need to formalize this function, and I would welcome suggestions on how to do it. So do people like the idea of a Stack Overflow-like instance of just basically answers and then people voting on that and having discussions on that?
It depends. I think I think it can work well in a lot of instances, but I know you've got to have a good community around it. Reddit can have some problems with, you know, good content sometimes being downvoted and becoming you know, no longer visible to most of the group. So yeah, I think it can work well, but it also has to be monitored.
Yeah. So. Did you say that on Reddit our stuff was downvoted, or just in general?
Just in general.
I see. Yeah. I know that Fred Isley set up setting up something on the Stack Overflow. I don't know what the stats that I can check in with him, but yeah. I mean, as far as monitoring, okay, so if I really focus my attention on that, I think we can get, and basically just paying attention to getting that. Like I haven't been personally paying a lot of attention to that because we're doing a lot of different projects, kind of like dabbling in a lot of things. But right now I see, I mean, one learning from these past years is that, you know, we've dabbled a lot, but we don't have something that went viral or got really, really taken to that point of 100%, right? So this is the time where it's like, okay, to make the money happen, there's revenue in, say, the CEB press. It's in our interest to show that as a model that, okay, this is how people can make money on it, and that we first can do it. So part of that is paying attention to the setting up the proper feedback on it. So there's a couple of more things on it. Like, for example, the replicators. There is a form we have up somewhere about replicators who post themselves on a map of replicators, but We just need to develop more on the feedback loops on this. Yeah.
I guess. My question would be along the lines of, is it going to be primarily driven through social media and the upvoting type system, or are you going to drive that as more of like a traditional code software type thought of, well, no, this is the feature request, you know, which is really what we're doing more in my mind is manufacturing type things, you know, like software releases, et cetera. That, as opposed to going the Stack Overflow method, strikes me as more in line with what you're really trying to accomplish, where you're like, hey, take that in, the community looks at the suggestion, you know, whoever the developers are and the prime people behind each project, be it the CEB or what have you.
I see.
That would be almost more like a code versioning system almost, you know what I mean? That short
I think
for the...
I think the answer is both, and that is try both. I think, so we haven't been using GitHub, like, you know, like there's feedback mechanisms in GitHub. The social media give, what I found is that social media are easy, you just blast something, and sometimes you get some really nice feedback. I think it's about both. What does that ecology of that process look like? So definitely setting up, working more with GitHub. And since we haven't written this, like, or stuck to anything in particular yet, that's to be written. I do imagine it certainly being both. For GitHub, definitely we want to use it for code, and that has the part of some certain feedback mechanisms, and also the social media is definitely the low-hanging fruit. So it's both somehow, and how, I don't really know. But this is something that we can do as the community, the OSE community, in terms of maybe hosting some work sessions on that. I mean, any suggestions here, or do you want to maybe try to take a stab of what a formalized process would look like? I mean, so just to show you what we have right now, work in progress is the development page on the wiki. Let me give you a link to that. It's called development template. Let me paste that in there. But if you look at the template, it's got a whole load. So I put it in. If you guys are you guys on PiratePad there? Put it in PiratePad. Okay. So if you look at that, there's a there's like pretty much a partial dump of various development steps from different viewpoints. It's not organized, so don't look at it too deeply. But basically, the approach, okay, methodology. What's happening? Yes. There's a development template. So a note on methodology. What we're doing right now is as step number one for the overall development process that integrated the end-all, be-all technique of how you develop stuff. First, you have to start with all the various development steps that are comprehensive. Now, for any single development, that's too much. But what you will do is for a particular item or a particular project, you can select one from the different steps in the development process. Or if you're contacting a particular group, like for example, say we're going to an Engineers Without Borders group or to a filmmaker group, we can make those steps visible to them. What am I talking about? You have the development template, which is a dump, a spreadsheet, a database of all development steps. It's structured data so that we can display it in any format we choose. So I was approaching it as, let's do the brain dump of all the different development steps, and then when we publish this, say on the website, or as templates on the wiki, we can pretty much write a script with this structured database to display that in any way you need. So we can communicate the development template in whatever fashion we like. So,
just to interject there, Martian, this is Jonathan.
Yeah.
Is the Zachman framework, which is essentially the development template that you've been doing, but more or less a customizable experimentation of that. So just to interject, the Zachman framework would be a very specific perspective that people will have developing a platform, which is essentially the development template, like you said, and putting all it needs is just some wrappers and skins to be able to enhance that.
Right. So you guys... the definition of Zachman framework. Zachman framework is basically, it's a fancy term for that includes how you view the development process. Like you can view it from the standpoint of an engineer, from the standpoint of a fabricator, from the standpoint of a businessman, or any kind of view. And you, when you do that, you want to look at particular items more than others. So basically, the Zachman framework is a framework of how you view things. And the concept here is we want to divide the overall development template. The development template itself will be a comprehensive listing of all the things, and then it can be organized by the different views. Like I tried to do that a little bit. Like I'm coming up with a lot of crazy views, but basically, let's do that as the first step because we can display it in any way that we choose. So, for example, if you have the overall development template, you can display, okay, here's the background on the machine, here's its design, here's its CAD, fabrication instructions, and blah, blah, blah. You can take those elements out, format that, and create, say, wiki pages out of that. So if we could do a script, little computer script, to extract that info, format it, and publish it, we can publish in any way we like. So, for example, we can go back to mastering the wiki for, using the wiki, or displaying that on the WordPress site in a different way, or displaying in whichever the main design sprint. You want to have the design sprint view. Here's like the critical items you need, blah blah blah, and you display it for the design sprint. Things like that. So that's where we are. It's not in any way finished or anything, but we can start experimenting with how these scripts can be written on top of the development template that we have already. So we can start prototyping, experimenting, test-driven design, basically publish early and often, do quick experiments on how this could look like. And at the end of the day, we can come up with some kind of a formalized development process. But I can tell you that any single platform is insufficient right now. You know, you can use like whatever, like Redmine or like Drupal or WordPress or some Uber social network or this or that, but you know, none of them are going to have all the different features. You know, each because there's so many different parts to real open hardware development. So we're going to experiment just doing the quick and dirty prototyping of what this looks like, and maybe someday we get a more dedicated platform, but for now it's a mashup of all kinds of different tools that exist already. You know, so at this point we're definitely not ready for like the full blown out answer because, I mean, we don't know how it's going to look. We have to experiment with the process, the practice of the whole process to see what's going to happen for how this looks eventually. But as far as, you know, like, so we mentioned the feedback on machine, you know, what can make it better, design suggestions, well, that will be part of the development process, right? So we'll have certain entries in the overall development template, and those would be visible. Say we want to do a review session, we can publish perhaps a dedicated review page or whatever, however we want to publish it, and spread the word. Instead of like upfront, like so the one of the blocks is because of the overwhelming amount of info, it's just impossible to manage it. Like, let's say when we organize a design, like you have to go off and organize, and it's like all of that can be streamlined, literally to the point of artificial intelligence doing that. You know, that's the limit. So that's what we want to do. We want to start by getting all the different materials first to be indexed and available in a massive template, basically a database, and then we can pick how we display that. And that will address a lot of the issues of how to display and organize this process. But imagine at the end of the day, you know, say you've got a 200, you know, you have a grand challenge of, you know, a rapid design sprint, you get 100, 200, 300 people. Imagine you have that, and each one of them works on one of the steps, and they kind of all feed back to each other and all of that. There's going to have to be a particular sequence and flow, and different processes can be created once we have those different steps. You can do a flow chart of how the whole development process works, and that's the architecture, the collaboration architecture that we need to develop and template and prototype. Starting by learning from what we've done already, say how the design sprints already work, you know, what's critical in them, what's the workflow, what should it be like in that. But these are all complex systems integration questions. So.
I mean, the original question was something about community. What was the original question on that? About was it the feedback loops? Is just more community involvement, or how do we address specific challenges and problems?
What was the question? Do we want to go more with like a formal tool for feedback, or do the social media and light duty kind of stuff? It's both. I mean, somehow we have to figure out how to.
I like your idea about the forms and the surveys. I think, you know, contacting your existing, you know, prototype. Finding those 40 involved, I think that's a great process too.
Yeah, and I think, so here's the concept. There's a few people that build the brick presses, and there's a little community around that, but right now I know only of two houses that have been built, one in Texas, of course, and one in Indiana. Jonathan is from Texas. But there's been a few machines that just didn't go anywhere, like people didn't even use them and stuff. So the community is not live. It's not a wild, thriving community. So I think what's going to be a real boost to that, I'm actually thinking that when we publish the open enterprise plan for how you go to a fabricator and build these and sell these, I think that's going to increase the use, the uptake, and I think we can start talking about a real serious development community. But right now, I mean, we don't have the numbers of people for any single machine. So I think the key is going to be that a number of people are using these, building awesome houses, and it may take the point that we have to release the house blueprints and the micro house model for people to get super excited about it, because right now nobody, you know, no, someone might not know what to do with a brick press. It's too hard. It is a difficult overall process. It's a serious operation to be using that brick press. So for example, if we have the turnkey house build over a weekend, which we're having significant headway into, then we can be in huge demand and brick presses will start popping up. Like, say, imagine point, we got to host a workshop in Canada. Okay, guys, here's take this package, get the machine built at your fabricator. So we come there and, you know, just empower them as much as we can. We can possibly lead that workshop or something, but get people producing these things and seeing the real product. So we definitely don't have the community yet. So there's a lot of interest from people who are tangentially involved and all excited, but a lot of times it's like the real skin in a game is missing, and I think we really need to address that in a serious way, and I think we can by, I think the open enterprise blueprints are going to go a long way as people can actually make and sell these machines. I mean, that's my take on it right now. But, I mean, we need to develop a community of serious users that... which is hard because, you know, one of these machines is going to be like $3,000 to $6,000 in materials, so, you know, there's a significant block there. And which leads to the other point, maybe the way to go about this project is to think about it as product service systems, not products. So product service systems means that we sell the services of, for example, the brick press, like the house, not the brick press itself. You know, maybe it will go to that point. We'll see. Definitely things like the microcar or maybe 3D printer, Hydrofaber, the combo prototyping machine, could be a small workshop. Maybe that could generate a lot of interest. I mean, there's different ways to get people involved in many aspects. Like, once I was actually thinking about if we can generate more massive parallel prototyping effort. For that, I think the Hydrofaber, the small-scale 3D printer, laser cutter, circuit mill, which actually now, we started that 2 years ago, but actually now, the small laser diodes make it highly feasible. So imagine having that, doing around that, and then creating your armies of prototypers. We say, okay, now we have a design challenge for prototyping the tractor with the box beam construction set. And you can do a full-scale model using 3D printing and laser cutting. Because we can laser cut tubing out of paper that you fold up and make it look just like the tractor. So imagine we create armies of prototypers out there. That could generate huge interest and a solid development community. But right now, we kind of have to close some loops on an integrated process for this to be really, really have a stronger development community. Yeah. So many exciting opportunities. Actually, Nate... he worked on a Hydrofaber a bit, so maybe that's something we can cover. But the thing is, you know, brick press, if we develop the whole process around that, we can template much more of the rapid development process for many of the other things, so that we take one thing to 100%. So, yeah. Comments, questions?
You may have sort of just answered this, Martin, Cody here, but I'm wondering if someone were to remotely design and prototype one of the 50 GVCS machines that have not yet been built, which machine do you think would provide the most utility to a factory farm or another enterprise doing something similar? Go ahead. My mind goes to the electric motor slush generator as being a high-value candidate. I'm sort of wondering what you think.
Well, I think that... if there's a remote effort, I would add the concept of the full development stream, which means up to a sustaining financial model. I think the machine that's low-hanging fruit on that is actually the Hydrofaber, which is a 3D printer slash laser cutter slash circuit mill. Three of those machines, like, for example, somebody did build a circuit mill off the RepRap, off actually Nathaniel's work. I mean, off the stuff we did with the Hydrofaber. Someone actually replicated the the CNC circuit mill part of it. And now we know that we have laser diodes that can do paper cutting or little construction paper cutting. So that triple machine, which is not, nobody's done that, but it, to me it sounds like low-hanging fruit, because that could be a thing where people start prototyping. And for example, if you develop the workshop model for that, imagine doing a one-day build. You know, okay, for me, like, for me, I have access. I can go to, you know, call up some university. Maybe people, you know, want my time. It's like, okay, host a workshop, build a dozen of these hydrofabbers. There's revenue in that, and it could create our armies of prototypers. And that model itself could be replicated. If we opened that up, what if many different people went around selling the hydrofabber workshop? What would that look like? I think there's huge potential there. Now, to develop that means some technical development and some... I think the hardest part is like all the sourcing and all that, but I think there's huge potential in that. And to share that experience, there's a group called 3D4EDU that does exactly this. They teach teachers how to build 3D printers in a 3-day period. Well, I talked to them. They're actually from the Joshua Pierce Open Source Sustainability Lab. Those are those people that are doing that, but their model is not replicable. I mean, I talked to the guy, he's like, you know, he like stayed up all night for the month before the event trying to organize it, because it's not turnkey enough. But we have to go from there and make that process more. We can deploy these workshops with minimum organization time to the point that it's actually a highly replicable business model. So that's my insight on that. We should perhaps take what exists through the RepRap and open source printing community and combine that to the Hydrofabber and add the value of putting in the efficient distributed production of that, because nobody's doing it. Like Lulzbot, take Lulzbot. They're still a centralized operation, right? They're open source. They're amazing. But they're still contributing to the centralized production model. They're actually getting like another facility for production. They're really, really growing, and they're going to take over MakerBot pretty soon. At least in my opinion, they're going to take over the 3D printer market, I think, because they're really, the guy's really, the Joe is, what's his name? He's a true fan too, but he's, what's his name? That's, I forget his name. But he's really committed to open source, and he's really growing the business side of it. But he's a centralized operation. So I talked to him about, well, what if we did... he actually doesn't mind that we take his Lulzbot Mini and turn that into an open enterprise, because he understands that open hardware means that you can make business out of it too. So he doesn't mind that, and he actually is encouraging that. So what we could do is add the value to the existing hardware community, open hardware community, by creating replicable models, right? Because that's the missing link for RepRap. I mean, a lot of people are doing that, but a lot of those operations are not all there on the business side, or just the efficiency of production, or just the concept that they're trying to get others into business. That's the heart of the distributed enterprise. What if that business were that we're trying to get others in business doing that? Because the market is... I think that's the kind of thinking we got to go into the direction of, and I think the Hydrofabber would lend itself to that, because it could, you know, say we can really spread our message out there, including distributive enterprise, including creating armies of prototypers for OSE. Because say you build 12 printers in a weekend workshop, and you can call on those people, hey, we've got a prototyping session, prototype these things. Out of the, you know, the tractor construction set, for example, that would really, really lend itself. You can print little 3D parts, little tubes, to make a complete, total model, scale model. It will take a bit of time, but that's an effort to actually do a 3D prototype in real life at scale, small scale. But that's my opinion on it. Beyond that, I mean, I'm very, actually, Jan is making huge progress on the microcar, which is going to be an awesome thing to do, but it's not there yet. I mean, he's got about a year left to... I mean, he's really going high-tech on that, including professional-level power electronics analysis, all open source. You can look that up on his site. But that's not there yet. We have the Power Cube. That's a good thing, but nobody has something for the Power Cube to run until we get the modular hydraulics as the power source for more things. Power Cube is limited because, you know, who's got hydraulic machines? Not too many people. And beyond that, I mean, we don't have any, I mean, the tractor, okay, so the tractor is going to be, once again, after the brick press, but I'm thinking that the direction to go is starting with a micro tractor because that's got a huge, huge application to people in their backyards and all of that. So a highly flexible tracked micro track, single power cube, that can be our big deal. Yep. With tracks, because we've learned that traction is a huge issue in these things. So make open source tracks, which would be a huge, huge deal, the types of that. But start small and then build up to the fuller size tractor, but basically on the same principles. We can stack those power cubes. We've shown that we can stack up to 3 power cubes in a single tractor. That stuff really is going to be exciting because we can make some monstrous machines, hold awesome design challenges for building crazy machines. That's going to lend itself to a high level of public participation. Comments, questions? Benjamin, is that Benjamin Kirkup? Okay, there's a comment. Hi everybody. Let's see, someone says that, Cody, did you say that Bernie asked a question that I didn't answer, or did I answer it?
No, he asked it on the conference call, but I think some people on the Google Hangout aren't on the conference call, so they didn't hear his question.
What was his question?
I don't recall exactly.
Okay. Benjamin, do you have some comments for us, or are you on the... Yeah, you're in the background there. So, maintenance manuals. What's the question on maintenance manuals from Benjamin? Maintenance manuals are part of the assets that we need to generate. Purchases and tractors. Yeah. See, the biggest issue driving my purchases and tractors. Oh, wow. That's a good... Now, see, that's where... So the comment from Beth saying that maintenance manuals are one of the biggest issues driving his neighbor's tractor purchase decisions, ability to maintain and repair. And that's exactly what we should emphasize in our stuff, and maybe the key to a lot of this work is showing how deeply one can get involved in actual maintenance and fixing. So that's favorable for us, and we haven't published, I mean, we have the Civilization Star Kit DVD version 0.01. The manuals in there suck. we got to do better, and I think it's a point we can do really, really good at, and especially if we do a template. Even something as simple as a Google presentation template that's fully, you know, just have very nice graphics and the full documentation in there, up to awesome instructional videos, 3D animations for assembly, language agnostic instructions. We can max that out, and I think we can make that a big selling point to the point where it's like a coffee table quality book. Yeah. So that's a good point. We should keep that in mind. Yeah, IKEA manuals, that concept has come up a bit. I don't know if you guys have seen the brick press, IKEA-style fab manuals for the brick press that we did. That's exactly the spirit. I'm going to pull up the IKEA diagrams for the brick press. Let me see. Have you guys seen that? Here's an example of one. But we did that for the brick press, which actually helped in the one-day production run. Those are really good to get a quick overview. And the link is here. And this is, yeah, IKEA-style diagrams. Which tools are required? Okay, so let me show you. So, Benjamin, you're asking about this. We have so much of this done that nobody knows about. Let me just show you an example. It's The work we did last year on the brick press, we spent about 2 months documenting that. So if you haven't seen that, let me show you what I mean. Because it does have, we start with tool icons, like what all you need to build this stuff. And this is like one of those things we just didn't get a chance to publish and we didn't make a big deal out of it last year. But let me pull that up. So okay, it's slide 20 on this page, in the first presentation on that page, shows you the CB Press instructional manual. If you click on any of the names, the manuals are like really extensive and detailed, and they start with the tools you need. So we're good on that. We're going to max that out. We're using icons and cool things like that. To give you an example, I'll just paste one for the... Yeah, to give you an example, this is the frame, and there's many... that's like the frame of the brick press. But we're going to revisit that, and there are some bugs in the manual that we have to fix, but... a lot of that is there, including things like, you know, safety equipment. Yeah. Okay. So, so maintenance. Yeah, maintenance as a whole. So maintenance is a huge issue too. We're claiming, like, you know, for the tractor, we're going to claim that the maintenance cost, we're trying to get them down to like under 100, for the full-size tractor, like under $100 per year maintenance, because it's pretty much lifetime design. But yeah, we've got, we need to do serious analysis on what the maintenance looks like. That's not published well. That's one big gap, I would say, for maintenance. I was looking at some other manuals, and it's like they have to be very thorough, and we are full, like, exploded part diagrams, everything else. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're about an hour, a little over an hour into the discussion here. But, yeah, I think we should call this a day. Maybe I can take some last questions or any other comments. But basically, we are going to work really hard to summarize on the development techniques and show the final result with the brick press, show that there's revenue in that. Right? Some more importantly, we can show many other people that this can be replicable and that there's economic sense behind that. So that's our main goal. And yeah, I think I'd like to maybe wrap this up. We can, if you guys, any of you want to follow up, maybe you can send me an email, marcin@opensourceecology.org, or you can paste your email on the public pad. I did want to talk to Nate about more of the Hydra fabric. Nate, maybe you'd be interested in taking it up. I think that's something we want to, I think we might want to prioritize in some way for this year, especially that the Lulzbot Mini came out, and we're actually going to get a copy of that. But we can perhaps build up the Lulzbot Mini, the open source printer for the Hydra fabric, to take that up again. But, yeah. Nate, are you still there, or are you on a call, or not really? Maybe not. Maybe on the Google Hangout. Okay. Okay. But yeah, any particular questions, Nate? Or any things we want to follow up on? You did send a good review, good comments on the wiki. Yeah, yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, right. No. It's on the main page of the wiki. Yeah, it's it needs to be updated. I mean, yeah. Yeah, I think the blog, I mean, we do a lot, the most recent stuff is on Facebook. Are you on Facebook? Yeah, so you can follow that. I think the next plan is to really do well on blogging again, more continuous and more in-depth than the social media allow. Do you have time to work on return to some work on Hydrofiber? Okay. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Right. Is that on the wiki or where is that site? Is it on the wiki or it's their site? It's linked on a wiki, but it's a separate site. Yeah. That goes into the concept of what OSC chapters are. That's a wild thing, and we got to set some standards and get that as part of the whole development process. So, you know, this year it's like the part of the development process is that. How do we get serious development effort coming from chapters? And that would go under the collaboration ecology concept. How do we formalize the agreement with chapters and how they get involved directly on design sprints and other more formal design sessions of OSE so that we can say, okay, this is the official requirements. Here's an official list of accepted chapters and all of that. Because, I mean, that's what happened is basically all these chapters kind of came up out of the woodwork by themselves. There were no formal standards ever set. And that's one of the things to develop. Yep. Yeah, right. Yeah. So what I think we can say on that is as we go forward on the plan, so we're doing a lot of planning here with the board of directors and the team here on this side, and we'll see how much effort we want to place on the Hydrofiber. But we'll definitely keep you in mind on that as any progress happens, make sure that you're involved on that. And really it's about formalizing the whole process that all these things start to become more coherent. Because, I mean, right now what you're seeing is like, you know, it's not the infrastructure for collaboration needs a lot of work. And it's our goal to develop that to a significant extent this year. And, you know, the real deal was, I mean, over the last few years, there's been a lot of things going on, just the total shock of being placed on a world stage and all the interest and all that. It's like, at this point, I can say honestly that I'm starting to recover and kind of like regain the bearings on the whole thing. So we'll make, you know, at this point, really going from a point of not that, oh, we have deadlines, but okay, what's right for moving forward right now? So I'm right at this point pretty much starting to take my third retirement, go slow again. I guess my first retirement was when I entered grad school. Second was right after I finished it. And now it's going to be my third retirement when I slow down and get all the stuff in order for OSC. Okay. So, yeah. Dozuki. Yep. Well, I mean, if, yeah. I mean, for example, is there a Hydra Faber placeholder? Let's see how much of it is, you know, that's one place to start, because we kind of, Dozuki is one of the better places. It's not anyway too great, but okay, there's, it should be transferred into the Dozuki, into the development templates there. But let's see, I'm looking, we have the 3D print placeholder for the Hydra Faber there, do we? Which is really like a separate machine. So one of the big challenges is that every time you start a new model, it's really a new development product. It's like you got to be able to manage that transition, and that's where a lot of things have fallen apart. You did one machine, then it turned to the next version, and everything fell apart because it got disorganized and different modules for the same machine and all of that. So it's one of the things to work out. You know, the Hydra Faber is not even there, but yeah. So if you look at the official list of names, I believe the wiki is actually correct. If you look at the GVCS page, and that's a, you know, that's a great start. If you type in GVCS, let's see what it says. On the top of, the official list of 50 technologies is found on the main website. Okay, so if you go to the GVCS page on the wiki, there's a link to the main website, and the main website, basically, if you go to the machines Global Village Construction Set on the main website, there it is. Those are the official names. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. It should. But see, the official names don't include the microhouse, for example, because the microhouse is a product of the machines. So what I think we can do is, yes, this is the official name list, but we'll end up doing a few more things like the microhouses and other products of the machines themselves. So hopefully that's not too confusing. But what the deal is that where I think that's good. Wait, where are you seeing the microns? Let me see that. So you're not looking at the percentage of completion graphic? You're saying the percentage of completion graphic is inconsistent with the machine index on the subpage. But if we say that I'm looking at it as the percentage of completion, that's it, because that's the GVCS page. Let's see. So under machine index, it's different. Oh, because machine index goes to the micro house. So that goes to the Dozuki, which is kind of the extended list. Yeah. So yeah, what we right. So what we want to say probably, okay, because there's some historical legacy here, and that is this is what we thought did it back in 2012 or 2011 or at that time, and it was publicized in a TED Talk, so we have to be consistent with that and all that. So we keep that, but we can say, okay, as time goes on, we evolve this set and maybe change a few things, but the official version is this is the 50 here, but we also say that, okay, we have slight modifications based on all the things that are really happening. Because that, I mean, some of it is quite emergent. We noticed that one thing, the main thing being that because it's a product ecology, one of the criteria is that the things fit with each other. And as we build something and find out new information, we see that, oh, it isn't like we thought. So some of the things may change. So we can accept that as, okay, this is the official core, but it's in transition a little bit. It gets slightly modified over time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, skill, one thing that we could use is an instructional on how to work with templates and start creating templates for, like if you're following the discussion on views, start creating templates that you think might be the better than what we have. Because what we have for a lot of the machines right now, I think it might need a little improvement. So formatting and templating of, if you see some clear development points on that, you might want to try that and keep me informed on what you're doing with that. Yeah. Yeah. Because definitely, I mean, you know what I mean by the template, the double bracket thing, the curly bracket thing? Yeah. I looked at the instructions on the wiki. There is no instruction on how to create those. So maybe if you can create those as the first step, that would be a great value added. That would be a great micro task. We'll score you 1 point of OSC credit, which we don't have yet. And part of it is getting badges in place that we can actually count this where the badges are. And yeah, a little gamification actually turns to real value because you'll be able to redeem it as discounts to our workshops and products. So we're going to create a new economy as a byproduct later. But in the meantime, we'll go with that. Yeah, if you can do an instructional on the template, that would add value, definitely. Mm-hmm. You know the instructions page on the wiki? It's basically it's a page called, it's wiki, the page named instructions. Yep, you can add that there. Yep. And maybe, I mean, if you're at it, the wiki instructions, that we use that page a lot, it needs a bit of cleaning. Yeah, I mean, what we want to do, I think Wikipedia is still a good model. They have for text contributions. I think we eventually do want to get a really sophisticated wiki template for how the machines look and all that. I think that's forthcoming. I think the wiki is very, very powerful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So so the thinking as of last year was, forget about the wiki because it's all confused and unindexed. So what we do is we say, go to Dozuki, find the machine, find the module, and find the content on it. And what happens is all the content goes back to some page in the wiki. But the Uber graphical index is Dozuki. So you can find anything in principle through Dozuki. Now, you probably have a lot of trouble with that in practice, but that's how it should work. Basically, what we want to do, once again, the idea of between content and display of content, have an easy-to-understand graphical index, and that could be the Dozuki. That's still, you'd click on a machine and click on a module, and then you go into development. Well, it's easy to set up is the main advantage because the Dozuki is supposed to be an instructional platform, so it's really convenient to do a simple graphical index like that. So that's why we're using. Now, there's many ways to do things. It's just just a visually appealing index. I mean, basically people say, like, as soon as they see the wiki, they get all scared. They need something simpler. So that's why we did that. And the main web page is still supposed to be the entry point where you can access all the from. So we need to revisit how to make the main web page, just opensourceecology.org, a bit more update that to recent things. Big thing being, like, development team. Yeah, right. And so what I would like to see happen with that is the main site should lead you to non-redundant data, but the other, I mean, in principle, the Dozuki should also. The wiki is going to be quite redundant, and that's fine because it's a sandbox as long as it's indexed properly. So we should pay attention to making sure that when someone goes to the navigation part, they can get oriented. And it's as simple as creating new pages on a wiki that provide the structure, right? So as long, I don't want to worry about erasing anything off the wiki because there's a lot of partial stubs that are useful. But just as long as it's indexed, the dirt could be underneath. Don't worry about that. Let's just get the good indexing on top. Yeah, Dozuki. But also we can, like, as, you know, the wiki should become more like Wikipedia, where it's highly, you know, just much better quality. And I think we will get there sometime, but that needs a little work. We should develop a few different templates. And maybe we can develop a nice template that makes the wiki just as good as Dozuki or something. I don't know. But I think we can, you know, see how things evolve with that. Yeah. Presentation layer. Yep, yep. Think of Dozuki as a presentation layer for content. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, don't worry about minor stuff. If you do things like, for example, if you want to share stuff that's social networkable, you can help me social network. Like, for example, if you pump up a new how-to on a template for Wiki, that's a nice lesson, right? So we can publish that. We can say, hey, Facebook, hey, world, we've got an instruction on how to make wiki templates. You know, that kind of stuff, little stuff we can publish, definitely. And then you'll get a badge for instructional production. We got to create badges for all this stuff. So I actually want to spend a bit of energy on, I don't know if you want to get into Mozilla badges, but we need to implement that for OSE. So there's another thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As you see, a lot of things to do in our ample spare time.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Then you're welcome. So then I will wrap this session up. So formally, this is the beginning of our first ever recorded TrueFan session. Hang in. Stay tuned to OSE, and we'll be doing a lot of exciting things in 2015. So thank you very much, and we'll take it, hang up at this point. Take care.